The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
So, good morning. Let's sing that together as we watch it with the lyrics on the screen. And
love will guide us, peace has trod us, hope inside us will lead the way. On the road from creed to king, love will guide us through the hot night. If you cannot sing like angels, if you cannot speak before thousands, you can give from deep within you. You can change the world with your love. Love will guide us, peace has tried us, hope inside us will lead the way.
Good morning, and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We're so happy that you can join us on this snowy day for some warmth, for some light, and for some encouragement deep in our bones. So I'm the Reverend Larry Pierce, minister at Thomas Paine UU Fellowship, located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. Today, wherever you are, that's where we are. So we want to welcome you wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender, identity, or expression, wherever you are today, we want to invite you into this ever-expanding circle of compassion, justice, and joy. If you happen to be visiting us today for the very first time, a very warm, special welcome to you. You'll notice that there will be in the chat a link to our virtual visitor card. If you take a moment anytime during the service to fill that out, that will give us an opportunity to learn a little bit about you and for you to request any information that you'd like from us to be on our mailing list and so forth. So welcome. Our opening words this morning are from a poem by Lisa Friedman. Lisa McCrohan. It's entitled Love As You Are, and it expresses, I think, a universalist theme and understanding, but personalizes it to each one of you, each one of us. So let's receive these words, loved as you are. You are unique. There's only one you. Do I tell you that I love you enough? Enough so that you remember the truth of who you are on the days when the world isn't kind? I don't love you for what you do, what kind of success you have in life, how well you do on an exam or in the game. I love you for who you are, as you are. Let that sink in for a moment. You are loved as you are. Just being inherently you. Today, Carry that with you. You are loved as you are. You don't need to do anything to earn my love. You are loved. You are cherished always. So may it be. And now, Tom Parker will light our chalice to open our worship service.
Our chalice lighting this morning is entitled A Gift to the World, to Offer the World, which is written by the Reverend Lisa Friedman. We hold hands to remember that we need one another and are a part of one human family. We join voices to remember that we each have a gift to offer the world and to use it in making the world a better place. Preston will now light the peace lamp.
And now I will light the peace lamp. Your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world.
Thank you, Tom and Preston. Our gathering song is entitled When We Are Gathered, and the lyrics will appear on the screen. Join in when you feel ready, and let's sing together When We Are Gathered. So it's great to be with you. I want to share with you a conversation through story. I've adapted this from a story written by Reverend Forrest Church, who was the former minister of All Souls Unitarian Church in New York City. And it's entitled The Cathedral of the World, and it's his attempt to provide some images and some words around a future of universalism. So the story is entitled The Cathedral of the World. Imagine awakening one morning from a deep and dreamless sleep to find yourself in the nave of a vast cathedral, like a child newborn, untutored, save to moisture, nurture, and rhythm, and the profound comforts at the heart of darkness, you open your eyes unto a world unseen, indeed unimaginable before. It is a world of light and dancing shadows, stone and glasses, glass, life and death. This second birth, at once miraculous and natural, is in some ways not unlike the first. A new awakening, it consecrates your life with sacraments of pain you do not understand and promises you joy you will never feel call your own. Welcome to the Cathedral of the World. Each in its own way, as you contemplate the windows, each pane of glass in its own way is beautiful. Some are abstract, others bright and dazzling. Each window tells a story about the creation of the world, the meaning of history, the purpose of life, the nature of humankind, the mystery of death. The windows of the cathedral are where the light shines through. A 21st Universalist theology based on the concept of many windows offers us both breadth and focus. Honoring multiple religious approaches, it only excludes the truth claims of the absolutist. That is because the fundamentalists claim that the light shines only through their window. Some, as we know from painful experiences, go so far as to beseech their followers to throw stones through other people's windows. Skeptics, however, draw an opposite conclusion. Seeing the bewildering variety of windows and observing the folly of worshipers, they conclude that there is no light, but the windows are not the light. They are the where the light comes through. We shall never see the light directly, only as refracted through the windows of the cathedral, prompting humility. Life's mystery lies hidden. In the Cathedral of the World, the same light shines through all our windows, but each window is different. The windows modify the light, refracting various patterns that come to us as streams of light and as patterns of light on the floor. The light is veiled, awakened by the light. We stand in the cathedral, trembling with awe. So staying with this image, I want us to turn our hearts towards a time of meditation. Recognize all the sources of light that have come into your life along the way. Savor all these sources of light. Hold them within your heart now. What enduring and lingering truths from the world's wisdom traditions, in whatever ways they've been reflected through your life experience, reside in your heart still? Speak that enduring wisdom in the sanctuary of your own heart right now. What experiences have stirred in you a sense of mystery, awe, and wonder, which, though light that fleets by so quickly, still when we are still, they radiate within us now? What are the joys of life that illumine within you? What are the sorrows of life that have tempted to dim the light of light within you and around you? Yet still, like a fierceless flickering flame, give truth still and lend hope now. Who are the people who have been light showers to you along your path? Bless them now in the sanctuary of your own heart. Receive these various streams of light that compose the particular pattern from which you draw strength. And I close this meditation with these words. attributed to John Murray, who's considered one of the fathers of universalism in America. You may possess only a small light, but uncover it. Let it shine. Use it in order to bring more understanding into the hearts and minds of others. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. So may it be. Amen. Now I have a musical meditation. Invite us to listen to it, to the first round. And then after we've heard the first round of the meditation in music, as other singers join the singer, why don't you join in too as we sing the other two rounds of the song together.
Circle round for freedom, circle round for peace, for all of us imprisoned, circle for release, circle for the planet, circle for its all, for the children of our children, keep the circle whole. Circle round for freedom, circle round for peace, for all of us imprisoned, circle for release, circle for the planet, circle for its all, for the children of our children, keep the circle whole. Circle round for freedom, circle round for for all of us imprisoned, circle for release, circle for the planet, for the children of our children, keep the circle whole. So
that was wonderful. And I want to share with you now my thoughts on Black trailblazers in universalism. So when I lived in Boston and served a downtown church, which was actually founded in 1630 as a Puritan church and became Unitarian in 1830, when many of the congregational churches became Unitarian. Oftentimes we would have visits from Unitarian Universalist youth groups from around the country. It was part of their coming of age program. And these youth with their adult advisors usually made a pilgrimage to Boston, which had many landmarks in the history of both Unitarians and Universalists. when I worked at the Unitarian Universalist National Headquarters in Boston. Clergy and lay people attending the various trainings I was leading often took a time out for a Unitarian Universalist heritage walking tour, since we were right in the vicinity where there were many landmarks of Unitarian and Universalist history. My spouse will tell you that when we first met, we would take drives to places like Gloucester, Massachusetts, where the first Universalist church in America was founded, or to Concord, which was the hub of some important historical Unitarian and Transcendentalist figures, or to the site of the Transcendentalist Utopian Community, Brook Farm, which was founded by Unitarian ministers and others. Doesn't all of that sound just really romantic? So I've always been attracted to some of the history of the Unitarian and Universalist movements. Typically, I've done what many of us do. I've highlighted the good parts, like the teaching and the characters who were considered heretical at their time, or the contributions that Unitarians and Universalists made to movements for progressive social change, like abolition, women's suffrage, progressive education, civil rights, and human rights. Oftentimes, contemporary Unitarian Universalists like myself have gravitated towards naming famous Unitarians and Universalists in history, even if some of these connections may have been a little tangential. I believe that naming these Unitarian Universalists kind of maybe gives some sense of legitimacy to what otherwise make us seem like a minority religion of self-proclaimed outcast. Maybe we're not that weird. See, E.E. Cummings and Buckminster Fuller and Kurt Vonnegut, they were Unitarian and Universalists also. Sure, we actually do have a proud history and have made some contributions to religious thinking, social change, and the betterment of humanity. And since my focus today is on Universalist, I could point to some of the famous Universalists. Did you know P.T. Barnum, that circus guy and philanthropist, founder of Tufts University, was a Universalist? Or Clara Barton, who founded the Red Cross? She was a Universalist. And since my focus this month is also on Black history, I'm going to highlight just a few stories of those that you may not have heard of. And of course, since the consolidation of the Unitarian and Universalist churches in 1961, there would be a lot more Black Unitarian Universalists to focus on. Yet, I'm going to focus on the Universalist part of our history this morning. Now, any of us honoring Black history in our country this year, in 2021, are recognizing that the story cannot be told in some of the same ways that we have told these stories in the past. Focusing on a few famous Black people or the victories of the civil rights movement, all of those are certainly notable and necessary, but because this year we're just so keenly aware of our need to do a deeper reckoning about racial justice, and recognizing that there is a persistent and a painful racism and white supremacy that still exists. In 2021, we realize that the challenges before us cannot merely be soothed by our reminiscing of selective memories of the past, without also doing some of this deeper reckoning. Isabel Wilkerson's groundbreaking book, Caste, The Origins of Our Discontents, which I think I've read it twice now. It's a really powerful book. Points out that through her research and powerful narratives that American history has from its beginning and throughout its history been shaped by a hidden caste system, a rigid hierarchy of human rankings of one human over another because of their skin color, ethnicity, gender, economic status. People were put in a hierarchy of value. The vestiges of America's racism and classism have influenced not only the directions of our country, but also have been responsible for multiple untold pains, sorrows, deaths, and brutalities that have endured over generations and unfortunately and painfully still linger on, as we know from recent events. So during this 250th anniversary time of universalism in America and during this Black History Month, I did want to find the good stuff, the honorable stories of Black universalists. And I found some, which I will tell. But I also have to acknowledge, alongside of these stories are also the institutional stories that we'd rather not tell. But I think it's time that we acknowledge them. So let me give a little context first, because we're not all on the same page when we understand Unitarian Universalist history. So I'm going to try to do this briefly. First, I want to make sure that I can say something about Universalism, which since the consolidation of the American Unitarian Association and the Universalist Church in America in 1961, Universalism can often seem like a forgotten relative in our religious movement. Oftentimes, folks still say Unitarian, when since 1961, they actually mean to say Unitarian Universalist. And as I've said before, ironically, we're one of the few religious movements that have theological terms in our name. Most other denominations have names that refer to their central practice, like Baptists or Pentecostals, or are named after their founder, Lutheran, Moravian, or their form of polity or way of organizing themselves, Presbyterian or Congregationalist. Can you imagine if Calvinists in the past called themselves today predestinationalist, how that would go over at a cocktail party? But we use a theological term to define ourselves. So it's ironic that one of the religious traditions ourselves that often contains many who claim some allergies to theology refer to themselves by these theological terms, Unitarian and Universalist. As you know, Unitarian is the theological belief that contrasts with Trinitarian, like Judaism and Islam. We have historically aligned ourselves with the view of one indivisible God. Unitarians have tended to also focus on Jesus as a prophet and a teacher, perhaps of God, but not part of a Godhead. And to this day, if you drive around places in Massachusetts, where some of the Unitarian controversy occurred in the early 19th century, you'll still see some congregational churches that specifically include in their name Trinitarian Congregational Church to distinguish themselves from those folks across the Village Green, the Unitarian or Universalist Church. A Unitarian understanding of God has existed throughout Christian history. It's not often told that way. So this controversy was actually more about an emerging understanding in the 1830s and so forth of the use of reason in religious matters and the emphasis of the human's capacity to develop themselves, to improve themselves through character and the choices they make in life, rather than being innately depraved. Universalism refers to the theological belief in universal salvation, the belief that all will be saved and share in the glory of God in heaven, or the restorationist universalists, this will be on the exam, so pay attention. They believe that all will eventually be saved in and share in the glory of God in heaven after a little trip in a kind of a place like purgatory before they get on to the full glory. So what was controversial about Universalism really is not only that it did not believe in eternal damnation, but that eventually all, whether they were Christian or not Christian, would go to heaven, would join into this harmony with the divine. Universalist ideas also pervaded Christian history, yet the organized movement of Universalism in America was launched 250 years ago, and we have just celebrated in this country that anniversary last year. So an enduring epigram that captures this distinction between the two movements comes to us from Reverend Thomas Starr King, who was actually a Universalist minister and a Unitarian minister. And he makes this distinction in the 19th century from the Universalists and the Unitarians by saying, Universalists think that God is too good to damn them forever. Unitarians think that they are too good to be damned forever. Both shared a valuing of the role of reason and religion as opposed to the emotionalism of the Great Awakening of Jonathan Edwards. Both movements contrasted themselves with the Calvinist views of human depravity and a punishing God that were very prevalent at the time. Both preferred to understand that religious thinking and understanding evolved rather than shellacking doctrines or creeds or particular interpretations of scripture as static, forever, or unmutable. Universalists had a history of condemning slavery. That is for sure. John Murray, who's credited with the founding of the first Universalist Church in America in Gloucester, Massachusetts, spoke at the Universalist Convention in Philadelphia in 1790, along with Benjamin Rush, who we know had Universalist leanings and was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. Both of them condemned slavery from the very beginning of Universalism. These Universalist resolutions against enslaving people, in the words of one of the pre-Civil War resolutions, said something like, slavery denies the eternal distinction between a man or a human and property, ranking a human being with a material thing. So this view of the human being as being precious, as being loved by God, of all creatures, all human creatures being equal of the glory and the love of God, was put as an opposition to this belief in making human beings less than human by treating them as property. These resolutions were signed by many Universalist ministers and they were advanced among their church conventions. Now, there were few Black Universalist trailblazers in the pre-consolidation with the Unitarians from the beginning. So again, these are those who existed prior to the consolidation in 1961. In the first Universalist meeting house, which was founded in Gloucester in 1785, it had among one of its members, at least, a person, Glister Dalton, who was an African who was brought to this country enslaved. A testimony honoring his background as a freed African slave quickly added the Universalist idealistic understanding. Yes, he came to this country enslaved from Africa, but he was not a slave, for there are no slaves. All men are born free in the language of their time. In 1801, Amy Scott, a Black woman, was one of the incorporators of the first Universalist Society in Philadelphia. In the 1830s, Nathan Johnson was a prominent African-American citizen of New Bedford, Massachusetts. He was a conductor of the Underground Railroad in New Bedford, which because of the Quakers, New Bedford was really a thriving place of abolitionist activity and a place where freed enslaved people often fled. Nathan Johnson was also a member of the Universalist Church there, which had an abolitionist as its minister, Reverend John Murray Spear. An interesting historical tidbit here is that some white anti-slavery activists brought a young couple who had escaped from slavery to the Johnsons. The man was named Frederick Johnson. But because there were so many Johnsons in New Bedford, Nathan suggested that this man change his name to Douglas. Yes, the famous Frederick Douglass got his new name from Nathan Johnson, a Black Universalist. That's just a little historical tidbit that most people don't know. There was energy among Universalists in terms of preaching to enslaved people. Reverend Ethan Winchester, a prominent Universalist preacher, traveled around the country and both preached to enslaved people and really preached against the institution of slavery because it really was very inconsistent with the universalist idea of one great family, in his words. Yet in spite of this condemnation of slavery from some universalist conventions, the sort of state conventions, were slow to censure their Southern conventions, which had members who had slaves. So that's sort of the underside of that history. So when Frederick Douglass was invited to speak to a National Universalist Anti-Slavery Convention in the fall of 1841, it said that Douglass's oratory convinced the delegates to finally censure the Southern Universalist churches that supported slavery. Now, perhaps one of the most intriguing stories that we can tell of Black Universalists took place in the Virginia Tidewater region. It was here that a mission of Universalist churches, Black Universalist churches, and schools were established. And these spanned over 100 years. And actually the stories about these churches and schools and their ministers and leaders actually are the major part of Mark Morrison Reed's chapters on Black Universalists in his book, Darkening the Doorways, Black Trailblazers and Missed Opportunities in Unitarian Universalism. So I'm going to talk about a few of those people and then have us reflect a little bit upon some of the other parts of our history. So Joseph Jordan, who became Reverend Joseph Jordan, pronounced actually Jordan, was the first African-American to be ordained as a Universalist minister in 1887. Some of you may know that Olympia Brown was one of the first women ordained in America by the Universalist. Jordan founded the First Universalist Church of Norfolk, Virginia. He also founded schools in Norfolk and the vicinity at a time when educational opportunities for African-American children were quite limited. These missions, these small churches and schools that were his legacy, over the 100 years that they existed, served thousands of children and families in Eastern Virginia over the period of that 100 years. So Jordan apparently learned of Universalism through reading and was particularly attracted to the passages about goodness of the universe, the love, parental guidance of the Almighty for all of humanity, and the promise of salvation for all. As Mark Morrison Reed's account of Jordan says, Universalism was not a religion of the bigoted, but for those who could accept that God's love extended to all equally, and that God encouraged all towards holiness, both the powerless and the powerful, the oppressed and their oppressors. Jordan came actually to Philadelphia for 7 months to study with the Universalist minister, Reverend Edwin Sweetser. As demonstrated in his ministry, Jordan had a double vision of a full-time ministry among his people and the establishment of day schools to meet the needs of the educationally denied Black children in Norfolk and other towns in Eastern Virginia. For Jordan, church and school, church and education, went hand in hand to help one live life with dignity, purpose, and effectiveness, and to empower oneself and one's community. In fact, they used a lot of Universalist materials in their day school as a way to lend religious instruction to the children that attended them. So another trailblazer is Thomas Wise, who was the second Black Universalist minister ordained by the Universalist Church. Now, his scientific education at Howard University in Washington, D.C. had caused him to question some of his own religious teaching background. So he went to join Reverend Jordan to teach in the school and to start a mission church and school in Suffolk, Virginia, not far from Norfolk. Reverend Wise was actually attacked by more traditional Black ministers in the press. Yet it seems that his defense of his Universalist faith in the Black papers actually drew more members to his church. So it had the opposite effect and a benefit to that church in Suffolk, Virginia. Another Universalist minister, Reverend Fletcher Jordan, not related to the previous Jordan, was the minister at St. Paul's Universalist Church and also served in their school in Suffolk, Virginia from 1904 to 1929. Now this Jordan traveled around the country, and so this allowed many Universalists from around the country to learn about these Universalist missions and these schools. And so they got support from the Universalist Church in America, the Universalist Sunday schools from around the country used materials that Jordan provided to help their students learn about African Americans and to respect their contributions to American society and so forth. Sunday schools raised money to support the efforts of these schools and churches in the Tidewater area of Virginia. Jordan always maintained that if he had more resources and ministers to send to Black communities of the South as they grew to they would grow to understand Universalism and would embrace it. The Universalist denomination concentrated on supporting the educational work of the school and saw it as a model for interracial understanding and respect. Annie Willis's, the daughter of these Jordans, was instrumental in continuing these schools, even when more educational opportunities became available to Black children. And then the school eventually began to refocus its efforts and became more of a social center and a social service center called the Jordan Neighborhood House. Some observers of that realized that the Universalists had gradually withdrawn financial support to this project, and it made it hard to continue the schools and to continue the kinds of efforts that had been started by the Jordans. Another trailblazer, Reverend Jeffrey Worthington Campbell, was the only Black student at the Universalist identified St. Lawrence Canton Theological School in 1937. He was ordained by the Universalists. He also ran for governor of Massachusetts on the Socialist ticket, and he came out fourth out of 11 names on the ballot. However, and people suspect because of his race, he could not find a Universalist congregation or even a Unitarian congregation to serve. And so he went to London, and he wrote of his experiences and his struggle of being a Black minister among Universalists at a time when it was not easy for those ministers to find a leadership position in Universalist churches that were not explicitly Black Universalist churches like the ones I've been describing. So Reverend Mark Morrison Reed, who's a contemporary African-American minister and colleague of mine, ponders why there were not more Black Universalists prior to the creating of the Unitarian Universalist Association. He goes on to speculate that one aspect of Universalism provided a theological conundrum to the actual Black experience in America. So I think it's important to name this conundrum. He says, why, given its egalitarian message, didn't Universalism take root in the African-American community? He said the Universalists tended to argue that the wages of sin were immediate and personal and in this life. And so there was a sense that sinners suffered inner torment now, and sin was considered torment in the here and now. But this raised the question, Mark Morrison Reed speculates, among enslaved Blacks in America. Why didn't the slave owner seem to be suffering, they would ask, if this was true? Why weren't they seeming that miserable, given what they were imposing upon their enslaved people? And moreover, it raised another question. Why was the suffering that African Americans were experiencing happening? Clearly, it was not because they had done something bad. It was simply for being who they were. So it's troublesome, this universalist idea of suffering and the effects of sin being ministry in this life when you present it from the African-American experience. And that perhaps was one of the reasons universalism was not that attractive to Blacks in America. The idea, however, of universalist salvation was revised in universalist affirmations over the years, particularly in the time, let's say, of the social gospel, when the emphasis became not a heaven in the next life, but an achievable heaven of sorts in this life, a better society that took care of human needs and human progress. The emphasis in that universalism became engagement in alleviating the social conditions that perpetuated suffering in the here and now. It was alleviating those social conditions that was seen as a pathway of salvation for all. Universalist ideal, when translated into the here and now, connected with the idea of a beloved community, that our liberation is tied into the liberation of others. This is a much more approachable and perhaps much more appealing understanding of universal salvation for contemporary people and contemporary Unitarian Universalists. Now, there is another key understanding of universalism as demonstrated in the selection from Forest Church that I shared earlier. It is that there is a light, a one light that comes from various sources to us, from various religious and wisdom traditions, from arts and sciences and personal experiences. So I ask, as we reflect on that other understanding of universalism, can we extend this idea of divine light coming to us from many sources to also allow us to understand that the particular Black experience in this country is a light that we could learn from, that lends wisdom to us, that enhances and expands our understanding of what it means to be human, of what it means to be able to create a beloved community in this earth, in this life now. So if we can receive that light, this panel of our Rosetta window of Black experience in this country, then maybe it has wisdom and truth to offer us all, whatever our race and whatever our experience. We should not limit ourselves to the perspective of some, to merely the dominant culture or the advantaged in this culture. If we can do careful and deep listening of those experiences who have been historically marginalized in our society, we may come to a newer, deeper, broader understanding of life, of truth, and justice, and what those can mean actually in practice. So we have something to reckon with. We have often fallen short of our ideals. We oftentimes recognize that our ideals alone cannot bring about what it is that we aspire for our world or for others. We have to tackle the structures that perpetuate racism and inequity if we're truly to bring about a difference, if we're truly to move beyond our partialism and move towards a universalism that encompasses the experiences of all. So when I served the congregation in downtown Boston, it was common for me to go to the UUA bookstore and resources center to pick up books and curricula and multimedia made available on loan those days. I struck up a friendship there with a woman, Marguerite Davis. She and I would often talk about books and resources and our lives. She was an older woman, maybe in her late 70s or 80s. But she was very friendly and helpful to me and very resourceful. And so going to the UUA headquarters for me during that time was also like a chance to see Marguerite. It was in my reading about Black experiences in universalism that I learned more about Marguerite. You see, she had been the young Black wife of a white universalist minister at a time in 1940 or so when that was not accepted fully in general society. But even worse was one universalist minister who happened to be the editor of the National Universalist paper actually wrote against their marriage. and how it limited the chances of her husband and his ministry. Very painful, of course. Of course, the editor's letter brought forth many letters of objection from people around the country, but sadly also some support. This was quite a controversy at the time. Her husband, Marguerite's husband, did indeed have a struggle in finding a pulpit. He left the ministry. But it was in reading this story, a story that I wished had not happened, that this history, this Black Universalist history in America, became more than pages in a book to me. This person who I knew as Marguerite was Marguerite Campbell Davis, the sister of Reverend Jeffrey Campbell, who I mentioned earlier, who also had trouble finding a ministry position as a Black Universalist at the time. Marguerite went on to work at the Universalist and then the Unitarian Universalist Association, retired from that work in the 1980s. Of course, I met her after all of these events. I didn't know any of it, but when I learned of her story in the reading that I did, I realized that within history is the word story. I never knew her story when I knew her. But when I learned of her story many years after our friendship at the bookstore, I couldn't help but feel a deep sorrow and regret. Her story is part of our Universalist story as well, perhaps one we would rather not tell. But her testimony to a broader life is what shone through to me. Though I'm not sure her light was refracted through these painful experiences of rejection and diminishment, I received the full light of her light as truth, that it had truth, essential truth as well. It shone through her life and shines through even more as I think about the full story of her life within our Universalist story as well. Contemporary thinker says that public moments of justice begin with private, internal moments, moments in which we are able to be still, to shift the speed of our processing, to decelerate. These are the moments in which we start to see what we did not know we did not know. This is at the heart of justice, this self-correction, this ability to be humble and to acknowledge our past failures and to make way for a new imagined future. So that's what my hope is as we review the full story of Black Universalist history, at least in that chapter of our movement. Let's acknowledge our past failures in this country and also make way for a new imagined future for people of all races, genders, classes, and ethnic backgrounds. That is salvation for all. So now we'll take a time to reflect on the sermon, share whatever insights, lingering thoughts we might have from the service, to also share any joys or concerns that we might be holding in our own heart on this day. So let's take a moment during this musical interlude to reflect. And following that, we'll get some instructions for those of you who will want to share very briefly during our Matters of the Heart. Thank you. So as we conclude our service, I will extinguish our chalice. We have our unison closing words, which will appear on the screen, words we've been using fairly frequently lately when I've been speaking, by Theodore Parker, a strong Unitarian abolitionist minister. Okay, be ours a religion, which like sunshine goes everywhere, its temple all space, its shrine the good heart, its creed all truth, its ritual works of love, its profession of faith, divine living. Our closing song is entitled Let Freedom Span Both East and West. The lyrics will appear on slides on the screen, and please join in when you're ready to sing along.
Let freedom span both east and and share, and South shall